Called order this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. The date is Tuesday, February 13th, and members present are Senators Bundy, Davis, Ellis, and Stevens. We appreciate all of you being with us here in the Belch Room in the State Capitol. Our business today is to begin a series of very important briefings, first on rural economic development, followed by workforce development issues. We'll also be covering energy issues at a later time and more workforce development conversation. These are three focus areas for the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee during the next 2 years. So we appreciate the folks that have put this program together for us today. We're going to begin with Julie Kitka, President of Alaska Federation of Natives. Julie wasn't able to be with us here in person today, but she's online, as I understand. Julie, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Julie, if you could get a little closer to the microphone.
Yes.
And state your name and affiliation for the record, and then please go right ahead.
Yes, my name is Julie Kitka, and I am testifying today as President of the Alaska Federation of Natives, and I apologize for not being there in person this afternoon. I actually will be coming into town later today, but I appreciate very much you giving me the opportunity to testify. The subject that what you're taking a look at as far as economic opportunities and ideas and how to create benefit and value for Alaskans is something very important to the Alaska Federation of Natives, and so we very much appreciate the opportunity to participate. I wanted to focus my comments on a couple things that I wanted to, first off, I want to ask you to consider some ideas, and then I will come back and explain why we think that that's important. But I want to put out first what we're asking you to think about so that you can mull that through as go through the rest of my comments. First one is I very much ask for your committee and the legislature to support high-speed telecommunications as both a national priority and a statewide priority to help drive up the ability for people to be connected into what is happening and the wealth of information and communications and business opportunities that are available via the Internet. I think it's very important for the state to have a role in telecommunications and to support access to high-speed broadband for our rural communities, as well as continuing having the infrastructure to support just state-of-the-art telecommunications for our state. And I would urge the committee to look at different models in other states, such as in Oregon and Portland, where they've now made high-speed Internet available to all their citizens in the entire city as a way to give the city an economic edge in business, and they've made it free of charge available on that. But people have been taking abilities to have access to the high-speed Internet in many different ways in the world, and that's an example of something maybe we ought to take a look at here in the state. But my first request is to make high-speed telecommunications a statewide priority, support it being a national priority, and to help drive up the ability for Alaskan businesses and Alaska people to be competitive in the global economy, and having that access is crucial to that. The second thing I'd like to ask you to consider is legislation which will change the investment climate in the state, particularly in our rural villages. Right now, there's lots of business activity going on in the state, lots of business activity interstate as well as globally on that, but not as much business activity based in the village. And for simple reasons is, one, the remoteness, the isolation, the difficulties with small population, the transportation, the high cost, lots of those things. But another important part, which is a role of government, is what is the investment climate? What are the incentives that are in place to attract business opportunities and job creation in the villages? And would really urge you to look at that as something that could be a step forward in this session, working with the governor to go forward with some proposals to change that investment climate and incentivize job creation in the villages, in the regional hubs, and for a couple of reasons. One, it allows people to contribute to building our state. It also deals with a host of problems that people have when they don't have opportunities to have jobs. And three, it allows our businesses in the state, as well as national ones and other ones that might want to relocate in the state, economic incentives to engage that workforce and the communities out in the rural areas. The third one is to consider feasibility studies of demonstration projects in Alaska. Our way of looking at different things in the whole economic realm is there's lots of opportunities to experiment, lots of opportunities to look at different types of economic clusters. There's no one size that fits all in our state. And the same thing with investment, feasibility studies on demonstration projects. The more that we do experimentation in the economic arena, the better off we will, because we'll be able to fine-tune those that work, discard those that don't, and take a look at those that work and try to scale them up to broaden them out beyond specific demonstration areas. One area in particular would like your consideration for a feasibility study is a free trade zone piloted in Alaska. And that may require some partnership with the United States, some partnership with the U.S. Congress. But I really think that in order for Alaskan businesses and Alaska people to be competitive in the global economy, we need to be able to have the same tools and the same environment that other people are creating in the world. And there's some really leading hubs around the world that are using the free trade zones, both for outsourcing, but also for ability to grow business opportunities. In light of that, my fourth recommendation to you is to consider legislation to create what's called a knowledge economy ecosystem, which is basically an array of public policy choices that could be made at the state level, at the legislative level, that support business and government needs for information and communications. Both the ability to have the people at the local level create regulations that are business-friendly and create opportunities, but also to be able to have the telecommunications networked in, to be able to have the investment climate, tax policy correct, but allow people to access the knowledge economy and turn their hubs into competitive areas in the world, but also as leading lights for the state of Alaska. There's many components to that, and some components can really be taken on by the University of Alaska with some additional resources and focus and attention. But again, the emphasis is to pilot and demonstrate these things out in some of the rural areas on that, and to grow models that allow people to compete in the global economy. In light of that, we're suggesting a demonstration project, what we're calling an Arctic Knowledge Village. And basically, we discussed that up in Barrow this past summer with Native people from Canada and Russia and Greenland on the idea of connecting people across the North, getting people connected into international trade, but also piloting the idea that you can have small remote communities that can be totally connected into the information highway, if you will, but that actually can create value to our state and contribute to our state's economy, as well as contribute to solving some of the problems that we have in common with the rest of the North. So consideration of, like I said, demonstration projects such as what we call the Arctic Knowledge Village, but also in light with that, and this probably gets very close to your program with your committee, is demonstration projects on workforce development for the knowledge economy. The way I describe it in our own regional meetings among our Native people on that is we want opportunities for our people not just to participate in jobs like, for example, Walmart. That'd be your career goal when you grow up, you'll work in Walmart, but to be able to have all the skills that any young people could aspire to, and a workforce development, which is a demonstration project, which is on workforce development, specifically targeted to the knowledge economy, is something that I think you could get a lot of collaboration in the state to develop, and would help us basically build a future in which a lot of our high school kids will want to stay in the state and remain. And you also kind of hit the brain drain problem that we've had for so many years. Another example of something that we're recommending consideration, and possibly this could get housed in the Department of Commerce, is some ability to do economic diagnostic support for communities. Right now, people come out to our areas and they say, why can't you develop an economic plan or a regional economic plan or a statewide economic plan? And people come up with lots of really good ideas, but you know what? They don't pencil out. They don't have a bottom line that will make a profit or that will be sustainable. And there needs to be some really cutting-edge technical assistance provided by the state, partnering with the private sector on that, to be able to give that kind of diagnostic help to our communities so that they can fine-tune some of their plans and, again, have more success as opposed to, you know, investment and good money after bad and have failures. So those are seven of the things that wanted to put out in front of the testimony as far as things that we think that would be very constructive and urge your consideration of. Now, to go back to my testimony, and feel free to cut me off if I'm kind of going a little bit far, but I wanted to tell you a little bit about the development of the Native community. It has been a little bit of time since we have testified before committees of the state legislature, in particular in regard to commerce issues and workforce development issues, but there's been a tremendous development in the Native community over the last, actually several decades, in particular in the area of governance, in community building, in economic and social development, and resource management. And this is important because when we're coming to your committee to talk about these economic ideas, we're coming from a position of tremendous positive things happening in the Native community and a growing sense of our interconnectedness with rural and urban Alaska, our internet connectedness with other Alaskans, and how much that the future of Alaska really depends upon the positive working relationships that we all develop and that we're all kind of in this together. So in talking about some of the areas of expertise that we have developed that we think that we can help contribute to the building of the state, for example, for our ANCSCA for-profit corporations, I know that you have tracked some of the things that they have done, but basically to kind of synthesize what are the areas of expertise that they have built up. They're integrating Native knowledge into development projects. They're developing models for both Native and non-Native commercial cooperation and joint ventures. They're doing activities that promote sustainable development. They're doing government procurement and contracting and meeting some of the toughest standards that the United States has set up in some of its work and the contract work they're doing. They're involved in engineering and construction services, oil and gas exploration, pipelines, mineral exploration, mining development, wildlife management, hurricane and recovery, disaster recovery, telecommunications and information technology, tourism, the business of arts and crafts, making that an economic activity that supports jobs at the local level. They're developing expertise in development in harsh and remote environments. They're getting greater expertise in worker training, ocean and coastal management, and, of course, forestry and fishing. What we've also done on the is on the nonprofit sector on that, again, has really developed a lot of models which are world-class, but leading in the state, in the country, the telemedicine model in the health area, the community health aid model, which provides 80% of the direct health care to our people in our villages on that, again, are world-class models that are being developed and worked and providing opportunities for people throughout the state. But that's in our social, nonprofit, tribal consortium sectors that have been developing tremendous capability. Well, if you added on to the capability that's existing now, and if you're taking a look at how that the state can be a partner with a segment of the population in the state, and we now make up about 21% of the state population, and you take a look at those economic ideas I suggested, those first five or six ones on that, I mean, there's tremendous potential for state and private sector collaboration, which we can create and unleash tremendous enthusiasm and positive energy in the state. And we can, instead of like letting competition kind of tear people apart or make the state kind of go into conflicts between one region of the state or versus another on that, we can look at ways that we can just totally expand the range of opportunities available for all Alaskans, and in the same time partner together with people that want to work together on that and see what we can create. And especially as we're looking for the towards the 50th anniversary of Alaska as a state, it would be really nice to see a very strong partnership coming between the Native people and the state of Alaska and the legislature, kind of looking towards the future of what we can build off the success. And I want to close with a couple things. Is one, we recently commissioned a 30-year trend analysis by the University of Alaska about how has the Native people been doing in the last 30 years. We know that there's been a tremendous investment of resource and time and leadership attention into the rural areas and some of the problems that we have had. But we wanted to do this report to find out, well, what progress has been made? Is there progress being made? And the university came back and did it, and it's all data-driven, and we've got all the report, the executive summary, and all the information. But basically, the end result of the report is, yes, tremendous improvements been made. Infant mortality has gone down. Total death rates have gone down. Life expectancy has gone up. There's tremendous signs of improved living conditions. Native income has increased every decade since 1960, even after adjusting for inflation. Even though Native income remains far below that of non-Natives, the increase is real, and government support and the people's efforts of themselves trying to help themselves has improved people's living standards. Right now, we have a targeted population that we're really wanting to make sure that they don't lose out as the state develops and all these opportunities go forward, and that is a population that still remains below the poverty level. If you look at the university report that they did, you'll see where one of the things that came out of the 30 years worth of attention by the federal and state governments and by the people themselves and the leadership was a decrease in poverty rate from in the 60 percentile down to 20% for Native people. What we are wanting to do is close the gap between the disparity that still remains between Alaska Natives and other Alaskans as a targeted effort for this next decade. So, for example, like where poverty rate for non-Native Alaskans is at about 12% and Native populations 20%, we want to narrow that gap. And we want to do initiatives that can bring along every major sector of our state so that nobody's left behind. Like I said, I could probably go into a lot more, but I just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of sense of some of the things that really excite us. We're very much interested in working with the legislature to see what concrete things can take place this year that can have benefit in the state and that can get us ready for our 50th year anniversary as a state.
Ms. Kitka, thank you very much for your presentation. We are, as a committee, looking for specific recommendations for statutory changes, budget recommendations, regulation changes, and you were more specific than presenters usually are in your recommendations to us. And just to sum up, I make sure I got my list right. You're talking about the state encouraging or supporting high-speed telecommunication. I just presented an award on Saturday to Red Boucher for a Lifetime Achievement Award. And a big portion of that, besides his public service, was his advocacy, his evangelism about high-speed telecommunications, especially in rural Alaska, and the economic opportunities that can afford people. Second, I wrote down legislation to change the lending or investment climate at the local or village level.
Right.
Feasibility study for a free trade zone.
Yes, free trade zone and outsource free zone, right?
Okay. And then knowledge-based economy ecosystem, that's a new term to me, and the demonstration project for a Arctic Village, Knowledge Village.
Yes.
And workforce development. And then finally, an economic diagnostic support for local communities and technical assistance. Is that, those were the five things that I, five major categories I got down.
Yes. And I guess the end result is there could be other ideas that are put on the table because there's a lot of people that are thinking about this.
Sure.
But what we're very interested in is the state trying to help set in place things that prepare people for the future. And the investment climate will help us create economic opportunities for our young people, help them get them into the workforce, will help them, you know, create futures for their communities. The telecommunications will help us keep on the cutting edge. I remember a number of years ago, the legislature had telecommunications task forces, work sessions and things like that. And one of the key economic edges that Alaska had is we had so little infrastructure before, so once we got into telecommunications, we were able to have the state of the art. And so we really jumped ahead of many states for quite a number of years. Well, at this point, we're really in danger of going backwards because changes is happening so quickly that unless the state makes a real commitment to keep Alaska on the cutting edge of the telecommunications and keep those opportunities going, a lot of the time and effort that's gone over the years will just be kind of irrelevant because we'll have been passed by with all the technology changes.
Right. We have to keep up. Ms. Ketka, thank you again. Are there questions or other comments from the committee? If not, thank you, Julie. And if you could send us any of your written materials from your consultants and any of those things that we can use to further develop some of these ideas, we would appreciate it.
Well, be glad to, and participate in any other work sessions that you'd like in the committee or any further hearings or whatever you'd like.
No, we'll keep you posted. This is an ongoing discussion to try and make some real progress.
Excellent.
Our next presenter is Alice Rogoff, chair of the Alaska Native Arts Foundation. Alice, if you'd like to join us there at the witness table, we appreciate you being with us, and please go right ahead with your presentation.
Thank you very much. I think since we have two kinds of show and tell for you, maybe we'll do the first one just to give you a change of pace from listening. This is a film we commissioned, which was directed and written and produced by Andrew McLean from Barrow, who's getting his master's at New York University in independent film. What we're going to do is go right to the fourth profile. This is a profile of Native artists from the northwest regions of Alaska. We hope with sufficient funding to be able to do profiles of artists from around the state. And then I'll speak after you get to see this. How do we unmute? I wonder if we have to go back to the beginning.
Who's our best?
You have to go back to that little thing that you pushed in there.
Are you a volunteer? Do you know how to do it? Oh, there we go. There we go. Thank you, Gary.
It was almost 100% subsistence lifestyle. And there's abundance of sea mammals, especially seals in the wintertime, middle of the winter, and walrus in spring and summer, collecting eggs and picking greens and berries in early fall. It provides.
Thank you.
Those are myrrh eggs gathered on King Island.
You getting hungry, Bee?
Kinda.
Kinda. I think so, I'm afraid. When I moved to Anchorage, you know, I was doing odd jobs, you know. But I always go back to carving ivory, you know, that I learned in King Island. There was seven or eight of us living in that small house. My brothers and sisters, you know, and mom and dad. And because of only grade school education, you know, when we left, we were not prepared for city life. You know, we struggled. Until I was late teens, I was lucky to see $1 or $2 a year. And this is where my dad's tools were kept, tools and implements on this bench. My dad, Aya, Suluk, Paneta, Natan, Mazin, Sangmeran. Sangmeran was a treat to watch, you know, and he was probably in his 90s, you know, and he was still carving. And it was, his method was very slow and gentle, and still he sits there all day, you know, and using small chisels, you know, to put in detail on ivory. Oh yeah, you did. That's a good work, and my God, you did lots on this.
Use a finer one over there to make it
smoother. No, we'll scrape it.
Oh, yeah.
Here, you try.
Okay. All I have to do is be careful.
Cut your knee.
Okay.
hand over this way. Like this. See how it is curved a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty angles and all, you should be able to take a lot of those grooves off. They're almost gone now.
Okay.
Okay, just on the end. On like that. Like that?
Okay.
All yours.
Thanks, Peter.
Wilford said, you know, that the fish are still running strong there.
So where are we going to go?
Nome River, Port Davis. We'll go on the other side, cross the bridge and go on the other side.
Much as I'd love to show you all 45 minutes, I think you've gotten a bit of the picture of what we're doing, so maybe I'll push.
No, that gives us a good feel for it.
Okay. If somebody can help me push stop, is there a technical person who knows how to stop it? I'm sorry to be so.
I do just want to make sure we have time for your presentation. So.
I think.
Done. Okay. Thank you, Carrie. This, by the way, is Carrie Irwin Brown, the executive director of our Alaska Native Arts Foundation.
Thanks for being with us.
She has many talents. Thank you for letting us show just that snippet. We've given each of you copies of the full 45 minutes, and you should know that sometime in the next year it's going to be aired on both French and German public television.
Wow.
Because this has been shown at several film festivals, and that was what came out of the Toronto Indigenous Film Festival. It was a contract to show it in Europe. Let me go back for a quick second and tell you just a little bit about us, although we've left you with much material. We are the newest in the long line of nonprofit entities that have existed to try and market Alaska Native art. We've been in existence legally since just 2002, and in terms of our full functionality, it's really just been in the last 2 to 3 years that we've had a website up and running with the newest technology that allows us to really grow sales in the lower 48 states, not just exclusively by internet, but heavily by internet. Who we are is something that I'd like for you to appreciate. I myself am from the East Coast, although I'm now also a proud homeowner in Anchorage. I do the bi-coastal thing. We began with a very small group of 4 people, myself, another friend from the East Coast who had come to Alaska with me originally as a tourist, but we were lucky enough to be flown around the state by a pilot couple who know the state intimately, he being an Aleut chief pilot for Alaska Airlines by the name of Theron Smith, and his wife, Terry Ellis Smith, formerly of the Ellis Airlines family from Southeast. The original group, myself, Barbara Overstreet, Veronica Slager, who's sitting against the wall in gray, and Willie Hensley, who Veronica was working with in D.C., decided that we could help market Alaska Native art by virtue of the fact that we were located on the East Coast, and that if we could somehow put together the right balance of Alaska Native artists and leaders in Alaska and people on the East Coast who had access to and knowledge of retail and art marketing circles, that perhaps that would be the one great leap forward that hadn't existed in all the previous incarnations. So fast forward, I'll just run down for you quickly who's on our board. Besides those 4 of us, although Willie Hensley is now emeritus, Julie Kitka is also emeritus, as is Ori Williams from Doyon. We have Gail Schubert, Terry Ellis Smith, Susie Bevins, an artist from Barrow, Sonia Kelleher Combs, an artist from Nome originally, now Anchorage, Perry Eaton, Maria Williams, Julie Decker, and Alvin Amison. I'm sure you know many of their names. We are probably one of the hardest working nonprofit boards imaginable, but for us it's a labor of love. So what we do is, together with our wonderful staff led by Carrie Irwin Brown, we operate in two worlds simultaneously. We buy art for cash at what we insist on being fair market prices in Alaska directly from artists, and we sell it both through our retail gallery in Anchorage, which I encourage you all to come see. We're at 6th and E, right below First Alaskans, across from the Penny's Garage. And we are increasingly going to be trying to focus on wholesale activities to museum shops, and now beginning in 2009 to art galleries and auction houses around the country. But there are two critical pieces of this that have proven to be surprising and somewhat challenging. One is we have to date registered, I think, about 900 Alaska Native artists whose work we sell on our website. And we register them because we want to sell each piece of art with the permission of the artist, with a biography and a photograph of the artist, so that none of this is done in any way as if it's generic work. This is one-of-a-kind work of highly talented people. We think there are probably 2 to 3 times that number of artists out there. And when I say out there, I mean literally all over the state. In your packets, you'll find a bar chart that shows obviously a huge number of artists in South Central, meaning Anchorage. But they really come from elsewhere, as you all know, in large numbers. In the Bering Straits, Norton Sound region, and in the Bethel region, there can be hundreds of producing artists in a single village. In the village of Savoonga alone, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I'm quite certain we have several hundred artists whose work we have bought in the last 2 years alone. That's a village with a population of 750 people, which means nearly every adult or a person over the age of 12 is making something that is considered art and sophisticated art. So the challenge we have is to get out there, spread the word to more artists that we are there to buy their work at a fair price. Now, I want to just do my second little show and tell for you, because I think this tells the story better than anything I could say in words. This is a whalebone lidded vessel done by a young man from Savoonga. He, for those of you who know lathes, and I confess that I don't personally, he adapted a lathe so that he could turn the whalebone vertebrae on the lathe to make it this beautiful, round, hollowed out shape, and then to do the same with the lid. In some cases, he does beveled edges. And then he gets the finest piece of old ivory he can find, and he puts the lid on top. Just a few weeks ago.
Do you want to pass around?
I absolutely would like to pass it around.
Dana will help you.
Just a few weeks ago, an acquaintance in Nome bought one of his vessels, because he's quite a little production line in this case. And he had the vessel that had been purchased at wholesale by a shop in Nome, which I won't mention the name of because we try not to be directly competitive with anybody. But the retail price that that woman paid in Nome was $250. And any of you who know retailing know that a markup has to have been at least 100%, maybe 200.
At least.
So you can imagine what the man was paid for that vessel by the retailer. This is one we have for sale. It's in our display case in our gallery in Anchorage, and we have a price on it of $535. $250, $535. Our $535 reflects the fact that we bought that from him for, I believe, $300 or $350 at the AFN convention probably last year. And we are trying to increase prices we pay and our own markup now uniformly to 100% just to help defray some of our operating costs. And we have found that the artists are delighted to see us do that. We were nervous at first, but they have no regrets at all about a nonprofit marking their work up 100%. So I guess what that means is that not only are we challenged by needing to develop the collector market outside, we are often confronted by people like yourselves inside the state who've been used to buying this kind of work at very low, really bargain prices, who are kind of disappointed that it's becoming more expensive. And obviously, we know that that's a good thing, but for some people, it feels like a bad thing. And I just want to make sure you all understand that, because you may get some occasional feedback about that, you know, about those ladies from Washington who want to raise the prices. Well, if you live in Savoonga and your AVAC bill is $5,000 and you can get a few extra hundred by selling that to us, we think that's the right thing to do. And that's why we're here. This is first person economic development, as we like to say. And if you go take samples from the villages where the artists know to sell to us, you'll find that they now know how to take advantage of high-speed broadband, as Julie Kitka was saying, to send us emails with digital pictures of the work they have for sale that don't have to be first-class photography. It just has to be a good enough image that Carrie and our staff in Anchorage can say to the email, yes, we'd like that, or no, we don't want it now, but could you send us two next month? Mm-hmm. And thanks to the internet, we now have e-commerce in native art, working both between the villages and us as their wholesaler, and from us to the outside world. And perhaps you all could take a look at our website when you have a minute. We typically have up to 2,000 pieces for sale at any time, because we know that our mission is to keep on buying. Even if we have to carry the inventory for a good long time, we try to pay cash for close to 95 to 98% of our inventory so that the artists can pay their bills. Anyhow, I had a longer statement written up, but I'm afraid I'm taking too much time. So
we are going to have to wrap up this portion. But
why don't I wrap up there?
Thank you very much for your presentation. And we are interested, if you want to get back to us about any specific suggestions about statutes or regulations, anything you've come across in your experience with Alaskans and with folks that might improve the situation. There may not be anything specific at this time, but if you could think about that and get back to the committee.
I would, and there's one thing that I could say right now, which is not a statutory or legislative problem, but it's something that the state government as a whole could help do, and that is to remember to add an arts marketing component to everything that the state does. You know, this is as much an economic engine in the villages as gas lines and gold mines and lead zinc mines, and yet the state government has resources all around the country through the permanent fund managers. It grows exponentially. There are contacts everywhere. So if by nothing else than an email chain, that word could be communicated to everyone that the state of Alaska does business with outside, the faster we grow this market, the more cash will be in the villages.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. We're going to move now to, in the time remaining, to workforce development. I saw Mike Andrews poke his head in there. Dana, can you go let him know that he's up? Mike will be followed by Wendy Redmond from the university, and then our wrap-up speaker will be Click Bishop, Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Labor. So that will be our order, and then we will be finished for the day. Welcome, Mike. If you'd like to join us there, I think we're going to close that laptop down there. If you just want to close the top on that. Mike, if you could identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, and then please go right ahead. And we have two folks after you, and we need to be finished by before 3 o'clock, or by 3 o'clock. So please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Ellis and members of the committee. My name is Mike Andrews. I'm the director of Alaska Works Partnership Incorporated. We're a not-for-profit that specializes in construction workforce development. It's a pleasure to speak with you today. What I wanted to talk about primarily was the issue of supply and demand for the construction workforce today, and to also report that While there is a continuing gap in terms of the number of folks in Alaska who are ready to go for the construction industry, based on the new job growth and retiring workers, that a lot of things have been accomplished, particularly with the help of the legislature in the last couple of years. And I did provide a couple of reports for the committee. I know you have a lot to read. One thing was the 2006 construction workforce plan that was adopted by the Alaska Workforce Investment Board that lays out eight strategies across the spectrum from career pathways for folks in secondary education and high school all the way through training adults and into pipeline training. I wanted to emphasize the plan because it was put together with the state's largest construction associations, including the Associated General Contractors of Alaska and the Associated Building Contractors of Alaska, and the Home Builders Association played a part. The University of Alaska statewide system and rural campuses, as well as AvTech and other post-secondary institutions, and of course, the organized labor and the construction trades unions and their apprenticeship programs were involved. The I want to point out that for example, the plan said let's do more in terms of connecting young people to the workforce, and last year the legislature provided funding for the Anchorage Construction Career Academy. There's a clear example of working with industry to help young folks in high school get additional courses for career exploration and to be prepared for jobs in the construction industry, and also for adults. We are operating the night school at the King Career Center for adults, and so far this pilot is really doing well. I don't know if you've heard from others, but the school district has reported that already they expect over 700 vocational education courses to be taken by high school students in the Anchorage area, and their program has expanded from three high schools offering some after-hours courses, basically 2:30 to 5, to eight high schools in the district offering these courses. And again, they're reporting about 700 courses will be taken. And we've had interest from over 300 adults in taking our courses nights and weekends. And we've just completed short courses in construction for carpentry, plumbing, and electrical. And we feel like this pilot is really worth continuing. But while there's a lot of information and there's some good planning out there, it does take the commitment of employers to follow through and employ people who have been trained. And of course, in Alaska, the largest evidence of that is registered trade apprenticeship. I want to point out that in the last 5 years, while construction jobs have grown by about 11% over the last 5 years, and we continue to see high growth in construction, particularly now in oil and gas development and projects on the North Slope, apprenticeship has grown by 18%. 5 years ago, there were about 1,000 registered apprentices, and it's included in this document I gave you. And today, there are over 2,000 apprentices in the construction trade. So we see that in that short time frame, that's where employers have looked to bring in new workers into the industry, workers that they can train, employ, and retain so that they're here when we build a gas pipeline. And inside that report, it talks about the investment of industry, at least from the union side of the industry, in terms of the money that they're putting into the system and the number of people they're training. 5 years ago, their contributions were about $3.4 million annually into training. Last year, they reported over $10 million going in from the industry to training. So that, along with government investment, has gone a long way to moving Alaskans into the workforce. Why I mention employer commitment is we're concerned about the potential of a gas pipeline and making sure that we have Alaska residents ready to go to work on that project, to make sure that we have opportunity for as many folks in school now and adults who want to get into the industry. And certainly that's going to take a commitment not only to train but to put to work. Without employers committing to basically hire new workers and train them on the job and give them the courses that they need to be qualified, we're not going to get there. So Another area that the legislature did help with last year, which is part of the construction plan that I pointed out to you, was investing in the pipeline training facility. Last year, the legislature provided $3 million to build a pipeline training facility in Fairbanks. We're the ones that are heading up that project, and it's moving along on course right now. We are seeking additional funding to finish that project. But things look pretty good at that end. So why I'm saying this is that as you get looking at a contract for building a gas pipeline, if this comes along in this session and you're looking at that, make sure you take a strong look at the commitment by the industry to hire workers, particularly Alaskan workers, to get them trained up now, because it's going to take several years of people being on the job, learning on the job, building these skills up to be qualified for those jobs. So in conclusion, I just want to thank you for the efforts that you've done in the past. I'm glad you're looking at this issue again today. I'm here to help in any way I can to move things along as far as the construction workforce in the state of Alaska and make sure that we can have a new generation of workers ready to go when that large project comes.
Thank you, Mike. I know I personally appreciate the years that you've stuck with this and provided continuity in these issues, so thank you for that. And will you be getting us more specific information about budget requests for the Fairbanks facility or the pilot project there in Anchorage for Voc-Tech?
Well,
any of those kinds of things, as they develop with the administration and the department, when that gets finalized, if you all could make sure we know about it.
Senator Ellis, I'll be sure to do that. We're sort of waiting to see what sort of bubbles up. We feel a lot of excitement in the legislature this year for vocational education mm-hmm. and for career and technical training, a lot of excitement to get ready for, you know, not only the continuing construction boom, but the pipeline. But as more of that information comes along, we'll provide it to you in the committee. We do have a breakdown right now on the preliminary costs for the pipeline training facility. I'll send that to your staff right away so you can see where we are there. And I would just point out that the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly has placed that project on their priorities list, and we are communicating with the governor about that project.
Excellent. I think Senator Bundy had a question.
Thank you, and I thank you as well for your work. A few years ago, talking with Dick Catanaugh at a meeting, he had pointed out that, of course, we needed the training, but it was very difficult to find people that wanted the training. You know, that it involved going to work every day, getting dirty, have to get up on time, and that sort of thing. The work ethic was missing. It's my impression that most young people wanted to start out as Bill Gates and go up from there. But did I understand you correctly say that there are now more demands for training than there are slots available?
Well, Senator Bundy, through the chair, there's sort of a myth that people aren't interested in these jobs, particularly young people. And I would say, for example, again, the Anchorage Construction Career Academy, if you were to go over to the King Career Center at 2:30 during the day, you would see that place is totally packed. And also now there are students who are choosing to take as an elective, as an additional course, construction courses after school, which is phenomenal. It's not part of their normal school day. But that's not the only place that we see it. We see it around the state as we recruit for rural apprentices, as we recruit for women in the trades. We're finding 3 and 4 times more applicants, people who are interested, than we have the ability to train, because certainly you have to meet industry standards. You have to have certain classroom sizes, and you have to have so much space. It's costly for construction materials, but that's really what's occurring. I think the many years of getting the word out by the Construction Industry Fund, particularly the AGC and Dick Catanaugh, who's a real spokesman for this, what we're finding now is there's just a lot of folks all across the spectrum, ages, you know, ethnicities, men and women, who really want this opportunity. And they see programs like ours as sort of a pathway. And what happens is by showing that interest, by showing up, by taking those courses, by, you know, showing the right attitude, they're really ready to go and then learn on the job. So that's really a phenomenon. I think we're at a tipping point, actually, in terms of more and more interest.
And we had hoped to have Mr. Ketna on today's program. It didn't work out this time, but we plan to have him back with us. It's all a big partnership and collaboration here to make this happen. And I was speaking to Carol Como yesterday because we hope to take the committee up to Anchorage and visit the university in Anchorage and the King Career Center and answer the question is, where's all the VocTech gone? And of course, Ms. Como would say, you know, with the resources, I'll provide more VocTech in the high schools because the message has finally gotten through, I think. Mm-hmm. I think Senator Bundy's right. It didn't there for a while. It's hit home now about the kind of, that not everybody's going to college or graduate school, that there are good paying jobs and a pipeline coming up someday, we hope, and that kids are clamoring for these kinds of classes. Kids you would never expect to spend time after school there on the campus, and that she can't fill the, you know, she can't provide the courses fast enough for the kids that are pounding on her door.
Right.
So it's the message has gotten through, and now we need to follow through. So.
Right, and it, I really appreciate that. And I would tell you, it's not just Anchorage; it's actually statewide.
Statewide,
from Kluwak to Kotzebue.
Yep. Mike, we're going to have to wrap it up there.
Okay.
You'll be back with us continuing this discussion. We appreciate your time today. Wendy, if you'd come on up, followed by Mr. Bishop. Wendy, welcome. It's good to have you here to brag on the university and all you're doing for us. So let us know what we're spending all that money on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Salaries, according to the things I read.
Wendy, welcome. Please go right ahead.
I wasn't in the top 10. For the record, my name is Wendy Redman. I'm vice president for the statewide university system. I had some presentation, but I don't want to break the conversation because it's such an interesting question that you asked, and I want to just add something to that that is important to understand. And when we say that vocational education is for students who don't want to go to college, that's just simply not true.
Yeah, that was the wrong way to put it. I apologize.
That is very much the wrong way to put it, so I'd ask that you correct that. Because the requirements to enter most of the apprenticeship programs are the same requirements to enter a college education in a baccalaureate program. And that's sort of one of the myths that's out there. And what the schools are doing and what we're able to do through the high school vocational programs is really to provide the math and reading and writing skills in an applied way that students are resonating with, and it really is making a huge difference. And the more money we can get into these high school vocational programs, it's just the most essential thing of all right now. Probably even more important than funding for the university.
Wow.
I'd like to have that on the record, please.
We're on tape.
The university. If I might.
Senator Bundy, go right ahead.
Actually, I don't think you're quite accurate, Wendy. You have to have a high school diploma to get into the apprenticeship program so you can get into the university without a high school diploma, I think. Isn't that still the case?
No, you do have to have a high school diploma, Senator Bundy.
Open admission?
It's open admission, but there is a floor. So now, if you happen to be taking less than, I think it's 12 credits, we don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
But once you decide to apply for a program, mm-hmm. And a degree, then you're expected to actually deliver some credential.
Mm-hmm. And if I might, and less than 12 credits, successful several semesters would provide the credentials, wouldn't it?
One would think so.
Yeah, so perhaps it's still easier to get in the university than apprentice program. Anyway, thank you.
Welcome. Go ahead, Lee.
The university has been very active in the last 8 years, particularly since President Hamilton came in really responding to the high demand job occupations of the state. We've made it a priority. The legislature has been very supportive of finding the funding for us and helping us to move forward. We can't do everything, but so we've really tried to focus what the university does, first of all, on those programs that only we can do, which is primarily those programs that are offered for credit. But we also do a lot of non-credit, and I wanted to focus a little bit. Dana told me we wanted to talk about oil, gas, mining, and construction. So I'll talk very fast. In the oil, gas, and mining areas, we probably do more than anybody. The MAPS program, which is a mining and petroleum training program out of the Kenai campus, essentially is the go-to group for all of the mining training in the state. Last year, they served almost 2,000 students statewide in credit and non-credit training all over the state. They've been very active down here in Juneau with Greens Creek in Kensington. We cooperate the Delta Mine Training Center with them. So we're very, very active, offering everything from safety to rescue, recovery, and most all of it non-credit. We do have petroleum and mining engineering programs, baccalaureate, master's, and PhD programs as well, but the bulk of the work is really the non-credit delivery. The APIC program, which is the Process Industry Consortium program, was established about now 6 years ago. The oil industry came to us and was concerned about needing to get workers to replace the oil field workers up on the North Slope, and they worked with us to develop a two-year program in process industry. They put up the initial money, then the legislature came behind a couple of years later and helped out. One of the things that Mike mentioned earlier was the importance when we start these kinds of programs of having the industry support for both participating in developing the curriculum to make sure that the curriculum is absolutely up to date, it's up to standards, it's what the employer wants, and most importantly, that the employer will give preference to the students who have gone through this training. And that was something when we were going out on a limb without the money to back us up at that time, we needed to make sure that the oil industry was actually going to hire our students that came out of that program. And they did step up. They actually require that two-year degree now as a minimum degree. We've graduated 235 students out of that program. I checked this morning, 95% of those students are now employed in the state. The program is run in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Kenai, and it's a two-year program. It's been a tremendous success for us, and the legislature came through and has been helping us support that program. So it's been a wonderful program. On the construction side, I think as you can figure out, most of the training for the gas line and other construction projects are really going to be done through the apprenticeship training programs. That's the primary training source for most of the construction jobs. We did respond to Dick Catnaugh came to us along with about a dozen construction contractors in the Anchorage area. Now, let's see, it's been about 5 years ago, and we had a meeting over at UAA, and they said they wanted to have a construction management program in place, and they wanted to start out actually at the master's degree level, then do a baccalaureate, and then do an associate degree. They wanted to go what for us is backwards. Mm-hmm. So we convinced them that we needed to really go the other way. The program really grows out of the associate degree program. And they worked with us in developing that first two-year program. And when we work with industry, this is Senator Bundy can tell you how difficult it is for faculty members to have representatives from industry sitting there developing the curriculum. Faculty have this sense that they own the curriculum. And so the idea that we would have actual people from the industry sitting there working with faculty, developing class by class by class, was a very new and innovative approach. Mm-hmm. But it was essential in this kind of program where the industry demands were very specific. They knew exactly what they wanted, and we needed to deliver it that way. So the two-year program went in. We graduated our first class at UAA last year. 40 students were in that first class. They're all employed. The program is now getting started in Fairbanks, and the industry came up last year and gave us $100,000 to begin planning the four-year degree. They really want that baccalaureate degree. They feel that the skills for the construction managers are just so complex that it can't really be accommodated in that two-year degree, and they're sending people back to us, their own construction managers, to pick up more business, more logistics, better writing skills, and so on. So that four-year program will be starting at UAA in the fall of 2007. And there's a request in our budget this year to support that program when we get it going, and I'll get to that later. The engineering is the other big push that we've made. We made a commitment to the industry about 2 years ago that we would double the number of engineers that were graduating from the university, and so we've been moving forward with that. Enrollments are up in Anchorage and Fairbanks. UAA is up 62%, Fairbanks is up 40%. More importantly, graduation rates are also up, which is a little more difficult. It's our most difficult curriculum. And it is a five-year program now, and that's working your rear off the whole way through. So we're working very hard on that program. One of the things that we found with engineering in particular is that we really need to get to the students while they're still in junior high school, because they need to understand this is a really hard curriculum, and they need to have the study skills in place. We don't have time to be holding their hands and doing a lot of developmental education. If they have to be on target for five straight years, and they have to come in, you know, with the algebra, calculus already in hand. So we have a lot more students who enroll in engineering, and after the first year, they're over in justice or history or something. No offense to any of you who are history majors.
You're losing points, Wendy.
Juno is
professors.
Juno is starting a program. Anchorage and Fairbanks are the focus for our engineering programs. But Juno is starting what they call a 1+3 program this year, because there's been a lot of interest down here. So the students will be able to complete the first year here and then move up to Anchorage or Fairbanks and complete the program. Anchorage and Fairbanks have had 2+2 programs where they're sharing curriculum, and students go back and forth because Anchorage doesn't have the full complement of all of the programs. So that's the other big response to the those were the two big responses to the construction industry. One of the things that we've started, UAS has a 1- and 2-year program in construction technology, apprenticeship technology, that's been very successful for this particular region. The Interior Aleutians campus out in Fort Yukon has, with a federal grant, developed a program where they're working primarily with Native nonprofits, and they're working with training people in the villages in their particular region, and they've had a very successful program, but it's very regionalized. So we're working right now on making sure that the skills people are learning in these programs are transferable. We want to make sure that all of our construction-related programs are integrated and linked with the apprenticeship programs, because the fact is, if anybody's going to really move into construction, they're going to be in one of the unions eventually. So we want to make sure they're not going to waste any time, so that the training they're taking is going to be able to be transferable to the apprenticeship program, that they'll get the appropriate credit when they move in. We've had a very good relationship working with the unions, particularly in Fairbanks, but getting better and better all the time in Anchorage as well, where we share facilities, we share faculty members, we share resources, because we have to. You know, none of us have enough resources at this point. All of our programs are linked to industry. All of our workforce training programs have industry advisory councils that are made up of people that are there to look at the curriculum, to look at the standards, to make sure that we're doing everything according to their industry standards, and that they're transferable from one campus to another, as well as from the university to the apprenticeship programs. We also have an interesting program that we haven't had a lot of takers on it yet, but we will as we move along with it, which is an apprenticeship to university training, which is because many of the apprenticeship programs, as some of you know, are extremely intense. Like somebody with an electrical apprenticeship can come into the university, and basically all they have to do is take, I think it's like 12 credits or something, and they have an associate's degree. They have to take some reading or some English class and a computer class, and they've got it. So, and those are pretty well established crosswalks that we've established over the years that have been very helpful. A couple of the things that have been the most successful and most helpful, I think, to us, and as you read through the plan, you'll see this was a big emphasis for us, is in the partnerships with the schools, because the input is an issue that we all have to be concerned with. So we have a very close working relationship with the Hutchison Career Center in Fairbanks and the King Career Center, but also with the regional Voc Tech centers and most of the smaller high schools in the state, Valdez, Ketchikan, Juneau, Sitka. We share facilities, we share programs. We have tech prep programs right now in 50 schools in the state, with about 1,200 high school students who are getting college credit for high school curriculum. And we have about 200, I just checked this morning, we have 220 students who are involved in construction-related tech prep programs. So they're working in the high school and getting college credit and or vocational hours. In Anchorage, The Tech Prep Consortium, which is run out of the university, has worked up a relationship. I think they told me 9 different apprenticeship programs in the Anchorage area are giving hours in an apprenticeship program for students who are in these tech prep programs. So we've really made a big emphasis on trying to really forge these connections to make it easier for students for the younger students to move on. The career awareness is
Wendy, before you go on, excuse me for interrupting, we got about 2 more minutes for your segment.
Okay. God, I knew this was going
to
happen.
And we'll have you back, so you don't have to get it all in today.
Okay. The summer camps and the career awareness is just a huge thing. We've put a lot of focus on this. I want to urge you to continue to support those programs. We funded ours through CTC and TVC up in Fairbanks with federal funds. The King Career Center's Career Academy has been a fabulous opportunity. If there are the things that I'll leave you with that I think are really essential is the adult basic education programs, which are funded through the Department of Labor, are really essential because they're picking up not the high school kids but the adult learners, and there's a huge population of people who need English as a second language, need their GED, need basic skills. We have got to make sure they got a little bit of money last year. They need a lot more money to really to serve that population so that we can train them. So I really encourage you to support that. If there's anything you can do to help using, even if it's just the power of your position, to help get the high schools to get more money into the high school level vocational programs, I urge you to try to do that. We find it to be the most helpful thing. The university's requests, I'll let you find those. You know, we have about $900,000 worth of requests that are in our operating budget. I'm going to leave you with a couple of things that I think are the most interesting. We've had a lot of support from the counselors. Anchorage campus developed this career pathways, which really helps the students and the counselors to understand what's required if they want to go into various career fields and what the options are that exist for them in different career fields as they get more and more training. So I think we'll find that interesting.
Mr. Chairman. Wendy, thank you very much. As you're packing up there, Senator Bundy, quick comment.
Comment, yeah. It would be fortunate if Commissioner Sampson from Public Education was here, because he has also mentioned some of the things that Wendy talked about, trying to reach those middle school students and get them aware that not everyone needs to be a philosopher. We need a few plumbers too. Mm-hmm. And I know I'd be remiss if I didn't mention to Wendy that it's really not a new approach having faculty work with business. People actually have on-the-ground experience. We do that in the community college all the time, and right. The legislature hadn't destroyed the community college at the behest of the university 20 years ago, we'd be ahead of the game right now.
Thank you, Senator. Wendy, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it, and we will have you back to dig deeper into some of these details. Mr. Bishop, if you could come on up. Commissioner, Alaska Department of Labor, this is a friendly committee. We're happy to have you before us. You'll be back at a later time, but we wanted to give you a chance on the issue of workforce development, because I have a feeling that was one of the big reasons you were selected by Governor Palin to be with us, because of your background in that issue. So welcome, and please go ahead.
Chairman Ellis, my name is Click Bishop, and I am the commissioner designee for the Department of Labor. And members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to address you here today. And man, it's just too bad that I've only got just a few minutes to go, because I could keep you riveted to your seats for a while.
You'll get that, another shot at us.
With
as
that
well.
Being said, I'm just going to save the best for last. So just to make sure that you bring me back, so I'm going to save my bullet page.
Sure.
And just talk about some highlights here and some solutions and issues and construction, oil and gas, and et cetera. But I think it's, first off, I think we need to backspace a minute and thank Mike Andrews and Wendy Redmond from the university. And I think you can see by hearing their testimony today that there has been a great effort to collaborate resources, get the word out, and bring people together. And I think we have the tools in the state to meet our workforce demands and needs. We just make sure we need to channel our resources so we're all talking on the same sheet of music. Anyway, with that being said, some construction workforce development plan highlights. Alaska's construction workforce exceeds 30,000 individuals. Just over 20% of those are non-resident, and those are measured by PFD data through our R&A department. Total industry wages are over in excess of $1 billion a year in construction wages. Non-resident wages total for the construction industry around $150 million a year. There are, I wish Dick was here, he has a great PowerPoint, but I'll steal a little of his thunder. We're going to continue to need to add 1,000 new jobs throughout the construction industry through 2012, and I don't think that data has changed much at all. Average annual wage rate for resident workers in the state is, for construction workers, is $37,000 a year. Issues. It is very evident, and it's easy for me to see, because, you know, I had lived apprenticeship for 16 years. There needs to be more apprenticeship opportunities in the state across the spectrum. We can talk about construction and oil and gas, but, you know, other businesses need to think about the apprenticeship model for bringing people into their workforce. It works. We need to employ more Alaskans in the industry, both urban and rural. Solutions. I have said it for years, and I'm going to do a little twist here. We talk about workforce development. I'm talking about job creation. If you've got jobs, the workforce development follows hand in hand. We know the workforce development model well, but we need to have more jobs for these people to go to. Okay. Engage high schools in preparing students for post-secondary voc ed training. I mean, I can't say it any better than what Mike and Wendy has already spoken it. Also, we need to expand our university and other post-secondary degree programs and non-degree programs. And I would like to say that in my former a life as an administrator for the Operating Engineers Apprenticeship Program, I went out, and I don't like using the word I, but I did. The governor said she wanted somebody that thinks out of the box. Well, she didn't know that she hired somebody that thinks out there in the ozone layer. You know what I mean? So, but I
thanks.
Yeah, she'll be wishing she hadn't said that one. No. But I partnered with the university 16 years ago with the Tanana Valley campus, specifically with the diesel heavy equipment program, and have fostered a great relationship with that university over there, and have, you know, we utilized Hutch, you know, it's utilized during the day, but we also utilized Hutch at night for our mechanics programs, and it's just a great benefit to us, you know, and it's sharing resources. I didn't have the capital to build another satellite training center in Fairbanks, but the university was gracious enough to offer us a place to train. And that's what it's about. It's about building relationships. Okay. We need to work closer with the Alaska Native organizations for improving avenues to improve Alaska Native hire. It's, in my opinion, it's not my opinion, it's a fact. Unemployment in rural Alaska is too high, and I would like to bring from my department a closer working relationship with the regional Native tribal organizations. And this department, with the help of this body and others in this legislature, we need to continue funding successful training programs, those that work. With that, I think I'll stop right there, because I was in my oil and gas, okay. And I don't have anything else I'd like to add right now. I do, but I know we're out of time, and okay. I appreciate your opportunity to speak to you today.
Yeah. Mr. Bishop, we're glad to have you here. I personally am very excited about the opportunity to work with you, and We hope to go see the Hutchison Career Center and visit with folks at the university up in Fairbanks, and maybe you'll be able to join us at that time. So
I would love
we'll try
to
and
that.
Coordinate some schedules and let you give us a tour up there.
Thank
and
you.
The Pipeline Training Center, that's a particular interest. Questions or comments at this point? Senator Bundy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome.
Thank you.
I've heard different estimates on, of course, if and when the gas pipeline gets going, about the workforce demand, and I don't need a number now, but as you get settled in your job, if you could give me an updated number of what you think workers, particularly Alaskans, we're going to need, it'd just be nice to know.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I would be glad to sit down with you at your leisure and talk to you about that, because in my opinion right now, that number is that's kind of a it's a black art, you know. To be real candid about it, you know.
Sure. No, as you come up with more information to share with us, we're very open to that. And just like for all the presenters today, any suggestions of statutory changes, budget recommendations, though we won't be the final disposers of budget recommendations, but and regulatory changes, any of those kinds of things that we can do to, you know, fine-tune the system and improve things, let us know, and we'll try and work with you as best we can. That finishes all of our invited presenters today. Was there anyone who's joined us here in Juneau who's not on the agenda who wanted to say something to us in the few minutes left? Was there anyone else who had something that needed to be said before we go? Wendy, did you want to come back and add something? Click, thank you for being with us. We'll have you back many times. So welcome
Chairman
to
Ellis,
your
members of the committee. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. When careful.
I better have my OSHA people come up.
Yeah, that's
slip, trips, and falls.
Oh my goodness.
I'm sure that's
just don't bring up workers' comp on that one.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to add one thing, and I think maybe this is the proper committee to do it. But Julie Kitka brought up an issue that is of tremendous importance for the university as well as the K-12 system, and that's dealing with the telecommunications infrastructure in the state. It needs some focus. We've talked about it in several committees already. Nobody seems to be interested. It's a huge problem, and it will make a tremendous difference for job training, for education, for economic development. So if there's some subcommittee, somebody that can begin to sort of gather some people together to talk about it, I think that's a really, really crucial thing to do in this session.
Okay. I will make that a point of discussion to try and bring some focus to that issue, because it overarches a bunch of areas and a bunch of different turfs. Anything further to come before the committee today? We do have another important briefing this Thursday. We hope you will all join us. Thanks to our presenters today and all of you who have joined us. At 3:05, we are adjourned.